the body, blocked by Mathias Janmark. He's free. Here he comes. Janmark with a shot. He scores! Mathias Janmark! And the Dallas Stars are off and running.
Well, he did it to him in game number two. Janmark and his speed. And he does it here in game six. Real good awareness by Dallas getting in the lane. And then the stretch pass to Mathias Janmark off to the races. And he just goes high glove side on Brian Elliott.
Chris Russell now inside. Colton Sevier back in the lineup. Fiddler right out in front. Did it stay in or out? We'll see. I believe we have a goal. Hesitation by the referee. They'll take a look at it on his birthday. Fiddler makes it 2-0. Stars cross. Brought along by Spezza. Toe drag. He scores! What a goal by Jason. 3-0 Dallas.
How quick can momentum shift? What a play by John Klingberg in the neutral zone. John Forsman had it nailed. The breakaway was there for Brodziak. Great job by Pietrangelo jumping in. Klingberg makes a kick save and a beauty with the left skate. And then off to the races, Jamie Benn. Eventually, he does a nice little dance, elevates the puck again over Brian Elliott. Bouwmeester falling down and off to the races. Watch Spezza. He's not going to shoot that puck low. That thing's getting up in the air in a hurry.
They're just fragile. Like, they're just, I know that they were able to get over that hump with Chicago. They feel good about themselves. Then they go and, you know, they lose that first game. They win two. They feel comfortable and they can't maintain. They just can't. There's something about St. Louis that will force them to seven games no matter what in the series.
There was the Shonster on the Friday Scrum edition of Habs Lunch on Friday. He's sitting in today for Rod Francis. He'll be back tomorrow. Mitch Gallo as well. Mitch Melnick with you. Hour number three, that was Pierre McGuire. And St. Louis did come back and make a game of it, but there's going to be a game seven. Meantime, in Pittsburgh tonight, game six.
Hockey insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub. Five locations, with a sixth now open in Chattahoochee, and by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
Excellent, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I guess Sean had the St. Louis Blues figured out. No matter what, it's going to go seven.
Bizarro. Totally bizarre how that game started. Because the first two or three shifts, they were really good. St. Louis, they were trying to establish what they were very good at in game five, forecheck, hard on the puck and all that. And then all of a sudden, the shot block, the Larry Nichushkin with the stretch pass to Mathias Janmark. Excuse me, the puck's in the back of the net. And then it's like, it's almost as if the fans just, uh-oh, this is happening to us again. It was surreal to be there, to feel the nervous energy and the trepidation around the building, and then the second goal from Vernon Fiddler, and then the third goal from Spezza, and then obviously Elliott gets pulled. But it was surreal to witness the swing of emotion in that building.
As we discussed yesterday, I couldn't see Dallas without their best player force a game seven, but they have at home. Carey Layton is coming off one of the best games he's played all season, considering the time of year it is. Hasn't been that often when he's been the number one player on the ice for Dallas lately. What do you think of this game seven in Dallas?
Who knows? I mean, it's a toss-up. Maybe St. Louis is better playing on the road. Maybe they just don't have to measure up to the expectation level of their fan base, because they've looked very good in Dallas. They've looked very comfortable for huge portions of that series. In games one and two, even though they lost game one, they looked very comfortable. In game two, they were very, very comfortable. Even though they won in overtime, they still looked very comfortable. And in game five, they were fantastic. So, I don't know. Maybe they're just better playing on the road.
And the puck taken away by Spaulding. And Spaulding flips it in. Tries to follow up. Rene to his left side for Salamaki. Salamaki lobs center circle. Picked up now on the backhand.
Oh, he scores!
Victor Arvidsson! Victor Arvidsson wins it! Go leap, everybody! Go leap! There's going to be a game seven!
That's another series I didn't think was going seven. What do you make of that?
That one was fun to watch, only because you always kind of cheer for the underdog. And I've seen Nashville go on the road and win a game seven in Anaheim. A lot of people didn't think they'd do it. Obviously, coming back in that game after San Jose scored the power play goal to go ahead in the third period, and the way they were able to bounce back, the tic-tac-toe goal for Colin Wilson. I mean, there's some good stories in that series. I'm glad there's going to be a seventh game in that one. I really am. I think it's a series that deserves to have a seventh game.
All right. What did you guys know about Colin Wilson before the playoffs started? I don't have to ask Pierre question. No, I'm not asking. No, clearly, I'm not asking you. I'm asking these guys here. Well, I'm just curious.
I was expecting big things from Colin Wilson this season. Colin Wilson, and Mitch can attest to this, about 4 years ago, we had a franchise draft pool, and I took him before he scored that 20 goals a couple years ago, and I expected 20, 25 goals from Colin Wilson, a top six player with Nashville heading into the season, and it just didn't pan out. But again, you're talking about 10 goals in his last 19 playoff games. This guy stepped it up.
And I guess what I knew about him just was the fact that he was a very high draft pick. And I remember watching him at the World Junior Championship and being impressed when he was playing for the Americans. I guess that was a few years ago.
Yeah, right? And that's why I ask, because I know these guys have seen them. But Pierre, how does a guy like that score just 6 goals during the season?
What's amazing is he was almost traded in January. I won't tell you to where. But I can tell you that he was his name was bandied about. And, you know, obviously they weren't able to make a deal, but it's a good thing they didn't. He's had a tremendous playoff. His speed has always been world-class. Just a little bit more on his background. His father, Kerry, played in the league for a long time, Hartford, New York, Calgary. His dad was a tremendously skilled player, very, very skilled player. Colin's a great skater. That's one of the things that separates him from a lot of the other players. He's one of the upper echelon speed guys in the league. So that really helps him a lot. And obviously he's showing some finish now. Didn't always have this kind of pure finish that you're seeing now. So I don't know if this is an anomaly or if this is where he's going with his career. But this speed is really amazing, and that's what makes him stand out.
I think what I noticed, Pierre, watching the game last night was the fact that Wilson just had such tremendous chemistry with Fisher and James Neal. What do you think it is about the three of them that makes so much sense?
Well, first of all, Fisher's just a hard guy to play against, and Mike doesn't lose too many one-on-one battles, and he moves the puck well. James Neal's become a dominant, explosive power forward that they were hoping he would become. And listen, he had over 40 goals in Pittsburgh, so it's not like he didn't produce in Pittsburgh. But they were looking for more consistency from him, and he did not show that. And that's one of the reasons why he got traded for Patrick Hornquist and Nick Spaulding. But with him able to dominate the puck and the power player that he is, and then you have Fisher, who wins a lot of battles, the speed for Wilson becomes really apparent, and it opens up a lot of things for those guys, and those guys open up a lot for him, so that's why I think the line's successful.
Not only does he have 5 goals, he's got a point in each of his 13. He's got a point per game, 13 points in 13 playoff games, which is well ahead of the next highest scorer, Nashville, talking about Colin Wilson. And what do you know, there was an actual Mike Ribeiro sighting at a most opportune time late in the game last night. We have all said that this is not the same San Jose Sharks team of years past when they kind of buckled under pressure, and I guess they're going to have to prove it again.
I didn't think they buckled last night. I mean, that was just urgency from a team that's really proud, Nashville. And you can see they rode the crest of emotion from their building. Their fan base was hugely energetic and I think really helped them. But no, you're right. There's a lot of pressure on San Jose going back for Game 7. This starts the thing. Get off to a good start, and chances are you're going to have a good ending. Get off to a poor start, very good chance you're going to have a poor ending. And we saw that, you know, I'm thinking about the Tampa Bay Islanders game and the start that Tampa Bay had and just how thorough they were in that knockout game. I mean, they were amazingly thorough and really good. But it all came down to the start. They had a great start, and they fed off that, and the Islanders were discouraged right from the hop. That's what San Jose has to do to Nashville if they want to be successful in the Game 7.
What does Pittsburgh have to do to finish off Washington? What does Washington have to do to prolong this series and force a Game 7?
Well, I think with Pittsburgh, the most important thing is to make sure that they don't get reckless with the puck and take a lot of high-risk plays or gambling-type plays because they want to impress their fans. They've shown that sometimes they will do that, and that gets them into trouble. So really important for them to play a smart, measured game. For Washington, I think don't change much from what you did in Game 5 in terms of the cycle game, the forecheck game. And let's remember, they only had one power play goal in the whole series until Game 5 when they had 2. And Washington, when they're on the power play and they're comfortable, that really makes them a better team. So they have to capitalize on the power play, I think, and play that physical grinding style that they like to play and force the Penguins to defend rather than attack.
That was a very revealing, a rare revealing in-game interview with Barry Trotz that you had, Pierre, and it was refreshing and to hear him say flat out, we're not as quick as they am and we have to face it. Did any of that catch them by surprise, do you think, early on, or what?
I do. I think it did. And I'm glad you were watching and listening, because that's absolutely true, and that's why I phrased the question. I was hoping that he would be honest, which he is. He's a very honest guy. And that when you drop game plans, not every team's perfect. Most teams in this league are imperfect. So when you're on the coaching staff of these teams and you're drawing up a game plan or you're drawing up a series profile, you have to understand your team's weakness and you have to understand your team's strength. And it's the same with the opposition. So when you're drawing up these plans, you got to play to those strengths and weaknesses. And I think maybe they were a little bit confounded by some of the quick strike ability of a Kunak or a Sheary or a Rust. I think they were surprised by those young kids. They didn't have, I don't think, a real good book on those kids. But as the series has gone along, they started to find out more and more about them. But one other thing, and I think this is important, it's not making excuses. Not having Brooks or Peck really hurt Washington a lot in the middle part of this series. Now they get him back tonight, that can make a big difference.
So Orpik's in for the Capitals, and Pierre Olimata returns to the Penguins lineup. I know they were worried about some of their younger kids on the blue line. Specifically, they've been worried about Schultz, they've been worried about Pouliot, they've been worried about Cole. How does Mata change the dynamic there?
Oh, that's a very fair question. I think Oli comes in, he's got to just play a simple, smart game. He's got to take a page out of what Ben Lovejoy did in Game 4. Lovejoy and Daly were tremendous along with Cole because they didn't have Letang in 4. Those three guys were great, and because they played simple, smart hockey, and Daly played almost 30 minutes. Cole was really good on the penalty kill, and Lovejoy was outstandingly strong in physical situations. That's what they need Olimata to provide. But you're right about, you know, there's been question marks about some of those young defensemen for Pittsburgh. But that's the biggest thing for Oli. Oli can't get caught trying to be over-aggressive offensively. He's just got to play smart defense and move the puck quickly.
Any word? We discussed this earlier. It was obvious Patrick Hornquist was not well enough to play in the third period especially. Any word on him?
Everything I've heard is that he's playing. Now, you know, this is the one thing, I don't know if you guys have talked about it, there's an extra day of rest in this thing for both teams. So that helps the injured guys and the nicked up guys.
Right.
Pittsburgh's not saying anything one way or the other. But I would imagine that Hornquist, who is as tough as they come, will be ready to play here in Game 6.
And Pierre, as you know, they're in good shape. They have a chance to knock out the President's Trophy winners on home ice tonight. However, there is, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, there's an unease about what's going on here to give Washington an opportunity to get back off the mat and roll all the way to a come-from-behind win here. One is the Hornquist situation. The other is there are a lot of guys that they counted on have yet to produce. Malkin said today, he's put some pressure on himself, I got to score, I got to put the puck in the net. Sidney Crosby, you would think at some point to win a series against Washington, is going to have to put the puck in the net.
Those are fair points, and here's going to be my rebuttal. Washington, in drawing up their series plan, clearly has utilized Matt Niskanen and Carl Alsner brilliantly against Crosby. They've really done a good job. Alsner's been fantastic against Crosby. The video, you probably saw it Saturday night, Mitch.
Yeah.
The video doesn't lie. I mean, they did a number on this guy, and that's just one game. I've been doing all these games, and they've been doing a number on him since the start of this series. Malkin had a little bit of a free pass because in games 1 and 2, he had to play against Orpik, and it wasn't very easy for him. Then Orpik went away because of the suspension. He got more room to move. But Orpik's back now. So Gino challenging himself, I think that's great. Now he's got to produce, and it's not going to be easy for him against Orpik tonight.
Do you get the sense that the Capitals, you know, got something going? I guess we'll find out early on, but in the manner in which they were able to keep going, stay alive, Ovechkin doing what he did, etc.
The one thing that I took out of that game 5 down in Washington was the energy that the players had after the game. Usually you just win a game, you prolong the series, and you move along. But they did it in front of their home fans. It's not like being down 3-1 and having to go on the road and win a 5 and a 7 on the road. All they had to do was hold serve in their building in 5, steal one on the road tonight, and then go home. It'll be just bedlam if they ever force a 7. But I got the feeling there was an energy to their team that I hadn't witnessed in any of their other playoff games, and I've done a lot of them over the course of the year. So we'll see whether that, you know, carries over here to 6. That's one thing that I thought stood out after the game was the energy the players had. in terms of how they reacted to the win, knowing, you know what, they got a legitimate chance to potentially force a seven.
And, you know, Ovechkin had such an impact last game. Pierre, do you think Sidney Crosby is due, and do you think he's starting to feel a little bit that he hasn't put the puck in the net in the series?
Oh, I think he's squeezing it. He knows. I mean, he's frustrated, too. They've changed the wingers up on him. But, again, I go back to that matchup, and Todd Reardon coaches the defense for Washington. It's easier to change two guys on the road than it is to change five. So it's not so much about the forward matchups against Crosby and Sheary and whomever they play on the other wing, whether it's Kunak or whether it's Rust, whether it's Hornquist. It's about Osner and Niskanen. And the same thing, when you see Malkin on the ice tonight, you're going to see a steady diet of 74 Carlson and 44 Orpik. They're not worried so much about the forward, but that's what makes it hard. I mean, again, I did that, so I know, and I knew what we had to do, and it's more of a map equation than it is about coaching hockey. You're trying to figure out time on ice and everything else, and it just kind of flows. But that's the biggest problem for those two guys. I just think that Washington's come up with a real smart way to take them out of the game.
Finishing up with Pierre McGuire on site in Pittsburgh, Penguins and Capitals, game 6, 8 o'clock tonight. Mark Crawford will join us in about 12 minutes from Ottawa.
Nice.
Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Mitch Gallo, Sean Campbell.
Pierre, I'm just curious about Matt Murray. If things don't go well tonight, does Mike Sullivan think about, hey, I need to get Marc-Andre Fleury in this game in case I need to use him in game 7?
We could see the same thing that happened in St. Louis last night. You know, when you think about it, Sean, you could have a Brian Elliott situation where Brian wasn't very good the first, you know, three goals against, and Hitchcock didn't hesitate. He put Jake Allen in. Jake played very well. And maybe that's what they're looking at here. Now, they're probably thinking more positive than negative. They should be. They're ahead in the series. They should be very positive. But if it doesn't work out for Matt, much to say he gives up two or three bad ones, I wouldn't be surprised to see him yanked and Marc-Andre Fleury going. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Now, the Blues say they're going to make a decision tomorrow. Can you see Jake Allen starting game 7?
I think anything's possible. But I think it's risky, but I think anything is possible. I really do. Elliot, this is the one thing you need to pay attention to. Brian Elliott, in all the games they've played down in Dallas, and so far they've played 3 down there, Brian Elliott's won 2 of the 3, and he's played really well, in all 3 of them. So,
all right, I'd be surprised, but we'll find out. And before we let you go, this is what a shot in the arm for the Islanders franchise to hear that Travis Hamonic has rescinded his trade request, Pierre.
Well, you kind of heard little things about it, but you didn't know for sure. It could have been family that talked him out of it. It could have been just his appreciation for his teammates. Maybe some of the teammates spoke with him, but Travis is just a tremendous young man. Lost his father, and I think that's part of why he wanted to go home and make sure everything was good with his family. But I think the biggest thing with him staying there, it says a lot about the credibility of the franchise going forward. It really does. There's a lot of positive to that, a lot of positive.
I love being an Islander more than anything. It's one of the best things I do in my life, is what he said when they got eliminated. And now if you're an Islanders fan, man, you just got to love that.
Well, sure. And again, I say this because I respect John Tavares so much, and I respect Matt Martin so much. I was in touch with Matt yesterday, and those guys are proud. Now, listen, Martin needs a contract. I don't know if he's going to give him a hometown discount or not, but those guys really are proud to be. They went through a lot this year because, remember, most of those guys live on Long Island. They had to commute every day when they had games in Brooklyn. It wasn't easy. They developed an amazing bond, that group. And I know they're extremely proud, but John Tavares is one of the better leaders, and the guys really gravitate to Johnny.
8 o'clock tonight, we'll be watching, Pierre, and talk about that and much more tomorrow. Thanks as always.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mitch. Please give my best to Mark Crawford and tell him congratulations. I'm very happy for him.
Will do. Mark Crawford coming up next on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.